Radio Gorgeous. Listen anywhere, anytime. Hello, my name's Josephine Pembroke and I'm here with Donna Freed.
Hello.
So I'm just going to let you know what's happening on Gorgeous Gossip today on Radio Gorgeous. So first up, we're going to be talking about our week, Girls About Town, Donna and Josephine. And then we're going to be talking to an actress,
Martina Laird, who was in the Tri-School Theatre's upcoming production of The House That Will Not Stand.
Fantastic. And then we're finishing off talking about the Mitford sisters, because very sadly, the last Mitford sister has died. So first of all, let's talk about our week. So what have you been up to in the last 7 days? Well, I know, because I was with you. We went to
Sound Women.
Sound Women was founded by Maria Williams 4 years ago, who is a woman in radio. So Sound Women is a group for women who want to start a career in radio, who would like mentoring, who would like to do networking. We've joined them and we went to an event of theirs.
Meet the patrons.
Because who are the patrons of Sound Women?
Well, it was Fee Glover was introducing them all.
She's from Radio 4. Yeah.
Yes. And there was Angie Greaves from Magic.
Yeah, who does the Drive Time show. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's legendary, longest-serving DJ, but also the first female DJ was...
ever on Radio 1.
That's right. Annie Nightingale.
Yeah, and she was there for 12 years before any other women arrived.
Yes. Yeah, she started in 1970. And also Jane Garvey of Women's Hour.
Yeah, so it was pretty good. And it was on a boat. And we arrived at Temple Station because Donna had looked it up on, you know, on the internet. And we found out we're in the wrong place, didn't we?
Yes. So, you know, our favorite thing, wearing all dolled up and wearing heels, marching up and down a Victoria embankment, getting blisters before we even get there.
We were getting really grumpy and we had to say, oh my God, when we get there, we're going to have to be really happy.
Well, I kept trying to calm you down and then you'd be fine. And then I'd start getting really grumpy again. Yeah, and you'd be like, no.
And we couldn't ask anybody the way because nobody knows. Because everyone's a foreigner or, you know, or
yeah, one
a
person
tourist.
Told us to go across the river. We're like, no.
Thank God we didn't do that.
Yeah. Another person. And then asking two people who work either with, you know, tourists about the boats or on the boats also could not tell us.
Yeah.
Singularly unhelpful.
But luckily we got to the Hispaniola.
Exactly.
And it was quite unnerving because even though it didn't move the boat, it felt like you were pissed.
Yeah, it was like living on... I've always romanticized living on a houseboat, which I've revised that opinion. Like, you'd think you had, like, bed spins in the middle of the night.
Yeah. But it was really good because you arrived and you could have pink champagne.
Yes, that cheered us up immeasurably.
Then we sat down at rather elegant tables and we had nuts. It's very feminine, you know, they gave nuts and olives and crisps so that we wouldn't, you know. And then they gave these talks and they were so honest, weren't they?
Yeah.
It was brilliant. Yeah. Who affected you most then?
Well, afterwards I spoke with Annie Nightingale and she has agreed to come on to Radio Gorgeous.
Wow.
And I was kneeling down and she said, no, take this chair. And I was like, but it's Jane Garvey's chair. So I stole Jane Garvey's chair, but it was at Annie Nightingale's insistence. So I thought it was okay. But yeah, she was wonderful. And we were talking about Dori Previn. And she was like, oh, is she still alive? And unfortunately.
Well, tell us about Dori Previn.
Dori Previn, we've had Kate Dimbleby on our show singing the songs of Dori Previn, who was married to Andre Previn. Andre Previn left her for Mia Farrow. And then...
How does Annie know her?
Because she's been a DJ and she's, you know, she is... Her fingers are still on the pulse of music now.
She said, I still love music. Mm-hmm. And that's her very
passion.
Admirable. Mm-hmm. You know, if she can be bothered to listen to modern music.
Yeah.
Because it's an effort to like new bands, isn't it? It's so much easier for us to listen to kind of old songs, which is what I... do actually.
I was like, my husband is very good at introducing me to new music and he's I don't know how, but he seems to manage to keep up with the young folk.
Okay, so Also, I chatted to Angie Greaves, who is the only woman who does her solo drive time show in Britain. And she's on what radio station?
She's on Magic.
Magic.
Wasn't I was so
and
upset.
She's the only black woman on the
Well,
station.
She said she's the only black person, yeah. Which I found shocking.
Yes, yes.
That in this day and age, so there it was, you know, this boat full of women. Mm. Liz Kershaw was there.
Yeah.
And, you know, women from every level of radio production, your former teacher was there.
Yeah.
And we're talking about women in radio. And she's like, I'm the only black person there. I'm like, that's ridiculous.
Mm.
That was, you know, even further shocking than, you know.
Yeah, but we're there about women, but actually
yes.
It was suddenly the race issue.
Yeah,
came
exactly.
In, yeah.
Which was, that's really awful.
No, really awful. The only person I didn't get to speak to was Jane Garvey, because she had groupies around
yes,
her,
she did.
And, you know, I was going to muscle in and say, when the hell is Radio Gorgeous going to come onto Woman's Hour? But obviously the timing's not right, yes. Because I couldn't get to her. You've got to believe slightly in fate. Anyway, so tell me about this week's guest. Then.
Is Martina Laird. You'll know her face because she played a doctor on Casualty for many years. But it's Black History Month, and semi in conjunction with that, but also because it's an incredible play. I spoke with her about the upcoming production at the Tricycle Theater of The House That Will Not Stand. And it's very interesting. It takes place in New Orleans in 1836. Now, for those of you who don't know American history, the Louisiana Purchase, America bought Louisiana from the French. It was a French colony. So in the French colony, it was very different from what was going on elsewhere in America. And blacks were free people. Some blacks were free people. So there was going to be a changing, you know, the changing political landscape, changing circumstances. And it tells a story. She plays the matriarch of a family of three girls who have grown up, you know, sort of in the good times. And she has the feeling like the bad times, the former bad times are coming back.
Let's meet her.
I'm here with the fabulous Martina Laird.
Hello. Nice to be here with you, Donna.
And we're going to have a nice, gentle discussion.
Yes.
Because your throat.
Everyone thinks at the moment I've done this deliberately for the part. And it would go very well with the part.
Yes.
But it's not in any way deliberate. I think it's just an unfortunate timing of the change of seasons.
Tell me about The House That Will Not Stand.
Well, it's a beautiful play. I read this and I just longed to be part of it. It's written by Marcus Gardley. It's beautiful writing. Lyrical, poetic, and it's set in New Orleans in 1836. So for the history buffs, they'll know that that's just after the period where Napoleon sold the French territories to the United States government.
The Louisiana Purchase,
correct,
as we know.
Correct. Hmm. So this is several years after. But as we know, these things take a while to come into force. And so it's just at that phase where the free colored people of Louisiana and New Orleans are starting to feel the difference that it's going to make to their lives politically, legally, and of course, culturally.
Because as part of a French colony, they were free.
Yes.
They were not slaves.
That's right.
As...
Well, there were slaves. That was a complicated thing. And, of course, that's why we had the Haitian Revolution. Because following the French Revolution, the French territories with enslaved African descendants reckoned, of course, that the rights of humanity that were recognized under the revolution would obviously be afforded to them. And they weren't. So it was a very complicated kind of structure. So yes, the free colored people, not just women, of New Orleans were able to hold property and just all these very kind of intricate balances of finance and wealth that under the United States government that was coming in, they knew would be taken away, that they wouldn't have the same kind of affluence or influence that they were used to. But what she can see about to happen is for things to move backwards. And she knows what they're going back to, and they have no idea.
Yeah. Because she's an affluent, free woman of color at this time. And where does her affluence come from?
So, again, it's there's a line that I have says, well, what else is a colored woman supposed to do? The idea is that in those days, it was quite normal. In fact, I think it is quite regular in a lot of cultures of that time, and maybe still so, but of that time, for men to have an established relationship outside of wedlock. Under this system, they were called place, as in placage, the system of placing a young woman of color with a wealthy white man. And the idea was that there were these balls that young women would attend where they would meet and be introduced to men who were looking for a place.
Wow.
And it was a good prospect. Mm-hmm. It was a prospect where there was a contract either signed or a very elaborate verbal contract made with the mother of the young woman. And then you were kept with an income, a livelihood, property, these kind of things. Ideally, I mean, mm-hmm. nothing always works. My character understands that in terms of selling oneself. And whereas for these girls, for the young generation, they see it as some sort of freedom and that they see it as some sort of a hierarchy that they belong to, that they can aspire to this placage. My character recognizes the exchange of sexual favor under slavery terms. So it's that. Is that a very complicated dichotomy between the generations and between the women?
Mm. And between the social structure that they were sort of protected in a sense,
yes,
in, and being of mixed race. Mm. There were hierarchies in that, but being mixed race was also an accepted part of the society.
It was this accepted currency.
Yeah. And that was going to be changing as well.
Yes, absolutely. That was not going to hold the same sway and reverence that they were used to trading on, mm-hmm. because of the color of their skin. Or... Absolutely. So these balls, exactly, were called quadroon balls, which we know under the rather hateful system of the colorism, or a friend of mine calls it the pigmentocracy. Mm. The lighter or more European your features, the closer you were considered to being of the master race, and therefore traded on that to the detriment, obviously, of the women of, or the individuals, not just women, of darker complexion. However, as much as I think it's really important that we remember these things, because there's so many people outside of that cultural environment who are unaware of these implications. And there's so many of us within that cultural environment who know that it is still alive.
And in the context of Black History Month, I also thought it was interesting, just the thought popped into my head, because voodoo enters into the play.
Yes.
So tell us a bit how that enters into the play.
Well, you see, that was another of the things that appealed about this play to me, because it seeks to represent the duality and multi-layered complexity of religious faith within these cultures. And coming from the Caribbean, the so-called New World, we know that with the diaspora traveled these religious influences and beliefs that then found their own place within the imposed European structures. And so we have voodoo in New Orleans, which of course comes from voodoon. What is amazing to me is that with all the effort of enslavement to rob and to kill out the spiritual connection that these religions hold in common with earth, nature, ancestors, divination, the veneration of the past, that it's survived. And the similarities that one finds, to me, bring a great sense of reassurance and happiness that this is somewhere that deep that it was unable to be erased and that it has surfaced again. And what this play does is to try to contextualize the magicness of this religion, but also to say all these ideas of darkness that are imposed on the concept come from something outside.
Yeah, that was the sense that I got immediately from just the invocation of voodoo.
Mm.
Because as you say, you know, these strong religions and strong, you know, earth-tied, community-tied religions were the things of bringing people together, which also symbolized what you had to destroy in order to destroy and demonize in order to destroy and enslave people.
And people still believe in that demonization. People for whom this could actually be a great source of strength still are very, very afraid of their own historical connections with this. And what's interesting at the point at which this comes into the play, up until that point, we've seen these women, they're very proper women, they're very, you know, women of society, and well, everything's just so. And you see them grieving, and it's the whole Catholic ritual. They're coming from church, they're singing Latin hymnals, they're, you know, all that kind of stuff. And when things get desperate, they come together and create this recreate this ceremony between themselves. And what that does for me at that point is just go, isn't that wonderful how they remove themselves from a very patriarchal structure into one that allows for the individual ownership of belief and of power, therefore, and they come together to create this thing. So that also, the politics of the individual strength is wonderful, that it happens just as it does in the play.
Yeah, and also that in the structure that they have been living, in that patriarchal structure, they had, you know, some power.
Yes. That, absolutely.
You know what I mean? They had, you know, within that society, they had power, they had wealth, and sort of returning back to their roots.
Yeah.
Because that was also what was coming down the pike.
Exactly. So it was power, but it was power as understood by the system within which they lived. And this hopefully explores that there is power outside of that understanding.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff.
But then at the end of the day, I don't want to get too kind of complex and bogged down about it, because at the end of the day, you can look at it. It's a beautiful story about a woman who's too tight with the way that she runs her household and runs her daughters. And the daughters want to be free and want to be young women.
A modern helicopter mom.
There you go. Absolutely. And so she's wonderful to play a challenge. But and we're having great fun, all the women together. It's a real sisterhood, and every day is just full of talk and gossip, and the rest of it is fantastic.
Is it hard work for the director?
Every so often, absolutely, she does have to borrow my character's stick and bang it and call attention.
Yes, exactly. Call mindfulness.
That's right.
You can't use phrases like crack the whip.
No, we can't use that.
Very careful. Very careful those things. And audiences know you very much. You've done a lot of work all over the place, but Casualty was a big role for you. And what's it like? I mean, especially, okay, so you have, you know, your voice and you're probably nervous and saltwater gargling you know, all that stuff and live and the nerves.
Yeah.
And it's very different from being on set at
at the crack of dawn.
Yeah,
absolutely. The first time I did theatre, coming off of over 5 years of just being on television, I stood in the wings before going on in such terror that I thought I actually had to speak to myself and go, you know what? In this world, we are actually free. You can actually leave. You will never work again if you do, but you can leave. And if you stay, it's because you've chosen to. I was terrified. And just this lunchtime, I was speaking with one of the cast members, Michelle Austin, and saying, I can't imagine how these women do it, who do these one-woman shows. I've seen some brilliant ones lately, and I just thought, I know. What I'm glad of is that we've got each other as we go into this period of preparation. We go, okay, we will not be alone.
Yeah, and the whole process of rehearsal and getting to know each other as characters.
Absolutely.
You know, and that magic that happens on stage.
Yeah. And what's nice for me is that many of them I either known before or have really admired their work. So there's a wonderful trust that you can come to the environment with. That means because you're going to be delving into things so deeply, and you will always get those sort of midterm blues where you're going, oh my gosh, there's so much and I don't know if I can do it all. And there's a wonderful sense of just trusting that you're in good company and with people who are working in ways that you can appreciate. So love it.
Well, I think your next challenge is a one-woman show.
Oh, my goodness, Donna.
Radio Gorgeous is putting it out
there. There you go.
We want Martina
what a thought.
On the stage.
Absolutely. That's hilarious. I'll write one for somebody else.
There you go. Okay. Good enough. Absolutely. And then they're going to shove you around in it anyway.
That's it. Oh, but it's great. And I hope you come and see it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Martina.
My pleasure.
And good luck.
Thank you.
Break someone else's leg if you
exactly.
have to.
I'll keep both of mine.
Yes, exactly. Thank you so much, Martina. She had a very husky voice, didn't she?
Yes.
Lovely.
So where's that on?
That's on at the Tricycle Theatre.
Okay, now I want to talk about the Mitfords, because really sadly, Deb Ober, Dowager Duchess of Devonshire, died last week. And she was the last light in the kind of Mitford sisters. And they were so original, weren't they? I mean, everything's been said about them, but I have got a little bit of gossip about her.
Do tell.
My job last week, I got paid for it. I was so good to get paid. I got paid to introduce the acts at the Soho Literary Festival.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And one of the acts was John Julius Norwich. And he said to me, you know, I said, we were talking about, you know, the Mitfords. And he said, Debo told me that she's never, ever read a book.
Wow.
And she's proud of it.
Even one of her sisters.
No, never read it.
Never read Nancy's book.
No. And the only book she'd ever read is about chickens and farming.
Yeah, well, she was very domestically inclined.
Yeah. And her sisters, especially, you know, the cruel one, Nancy, who was the cruel and witty. I mean, they go together, don't they? She called her a housewife. Mm. But what a great, I mean, if you're going to be a housewife, you've got to choose a ginormous palace.
And what a house. Yes, Chatsworth is now.
Yeah. Have you ever been there?
No, but I think she was probably the happiest of them. Yeah. Unless it was the one who went to America. What was her name? Who was
Decca.
The communist.
Decca. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I love Decca because she wrote Ons and Rebels, which is one of my favorite books. Yeah.
I don't think, I think Debo was happier because she kept herself out of politics, out of family politics. You know, I think.
Well, she was a lot younger as well, so she didn't probably have the kind of intensity of the firstborns, you know.
Mm. But they were the original, you know, the original English eccentrics.
Yes.
The whole family.
Yeah.
From soup to nut. Dad, mom, you know, the whole thing. And you realize they were connected to, between all of them, they were connected to everyone at the time.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, internationally.
India Knight in This Week in the Sunday Times does say that the depressing thing is the equivalent now is the Kardashians.
Yes. Oh, God, she's right.
And also no one can be eccentric now, because eccentric means you're going to get tons of press. You know, eccentric means you've got a car crash life, you know, And that's, you know, bad for your image, you know, because you can't sell products. So it's now all about being bland, isn't it? The eccentrics have gone, you know. I mean, who are eccentrics now? I mean, I suppose someone like Katie Price is quite eccentric because she does have sex with, she marries anybody, and you know what I mean? And, you know, she's got a bit of a,
well,
know,
and she does have a brain.
Life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But she does have a brain.
Yeah, because she's a businesswoman. Yeah. Yeah. In romance, she, you know. But I'm just thinking, in a way, they are, she's, I mean, I know we think, God, she's awful. But in a way, she's actually more, she's got a more interesting life than someone very bland like Jennifer Aniston, you know, that people kind of worship. But actually, she's just dull, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, you've got to kind of weigh up about what is interesting, you know.
I think Angelina Jolie might fit those. But it's
but
not
she
like...
she keeps her life so, you know...
Yeah, it's separate. It's
separate. And you also don't know. I mean, I've heard she's, you know, a madam and not got a temper and insane and demanding. But, you know, we'll never really know till she dies and then it'll all come out. But being younger than me, I'll probably die after her. Anyway, so what's your last thought about the Mitfords then before we go?
I think they are more appreciated now. You know, there's been a renaissance of appreciation for them, which I think is warranted. I do think it's warranted. Their contribution to emblematic of the times that they lived in.
Which was the 20th century, mm-hmm. which actually I think was the most exciting century really that's happened. And luckily we were born at the end of it.
The tail end.
Exactly.
Just got in there.
Exactly. But look, lovely to speak to you today, Donna, on Radio Gorgeous. And what do you think about the Mitfords? Please let us know. You can tweet us or you can email us info@radiogorgeous.com. Thank you so much for all our guests and thank you. Gorgeous Gossip was presented by Josephine Pembroke and Donna Freed and produced by Josephine Pembroke and Donna Freed. He loved me, but he loved the beach.